Welcome to the podcast to be named later, where we explore the world a conversation at a time. Sit back and enjoy. Here are your hosts, Chris and Kelly.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the podcast to be named later. We've been on a bit of a off-season hiatus, I guess, as we seem to follow the NFL. But I'm here in Wisconsin, and Chris is ready to go out in California. Chris, I haven't talked to you for a bit. How you been, man?
I've been really good, Kelly. I'm excited to chat with you again.
Yeah, looking forward to it. You know, Chris, I was just telling you, it's summertime, obviously, here in the northern hemisphere of the U.S. and the planet. And I don't know, every time a summer rolls around and I'm working, I always think back to those few kind of sweet spot years of childhood. Maybe, maybe age 11 or 12 up to about 16, 17. Probably old enough to kind of enjoy the world, but young enough not to have too many responsibilities and no school and everything else. So summer was always kind of one of my favorite seasons. How about you?
Oh, 100%. I think for every kid, they look forward to summer, or very close to every kid. Maybe not 100% of them, but I got a 14-year-old son, and he was counting down the hours as the school year was winding down, and couldn't wait to clear out his locker and not have to carry textbooks home anymore. And I remember those days, man. I mean, it was beautiful. You just couldn't wait, right? A lot of times you kind of coast through that last week. You know, there might be some tests mixed in there, but you know, the teachers generally take it pretty easy on you down the stretch, and you kind of coast to the finish line. And I just remember that feeling, man, when you're finally done. And it's like, especially when the summer first starts, you know, day one, two, three, four, it's like, man, the whole summer's still in front of you. Who knows what you're going to do, you know? And back when I was a younger kid, like you're talking 10, 11, 12, you know, you had to be creative, and, you know, everyone was out of school, so you just kind of met up with your buddies out in the front yard, or, you know, or sometimes you had, like, a park you would meet at or something, and you'd show up, and there'd be a group of people there, and then you just, I don't know, what do you guys want to do today? We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we were pretty lucky where I grew up. I mean, you know the town, Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and you know where my parents' house was. I mean, two blocks in one direction was a school, where you could go out, play ball, do whatever, and talk about that in a second. 2 to 3 blocks in another direction was the public swimming pool. And, back in those days, it was like a quarter to go swimming. And a couple blocks in the other direction was a newer park that they had just made for those in Fond du Lac called Buttermilk Creek. And we had a neighborhood of a bunch of kids, man. And, we pretty much be outside from morning till, I don't know, later in the night, playing different games or things like that. I always do remember, though, what we used to call playground, I think, but really, I don't even think they do this anymore, but at least where I grew up in Fond du Lac, back in the day, the schools, most of the elementary schools, had a couple of, I don't know, they were probably college-age people, that would run these rec programs. And they had a combination of, like, board games, athletic games. And there was just activities all day long that you could go up to the playground and do. And they would take the occasional field trip, you know. But whether, they had a couple of things that I always remember. They had one that they called box hockey. Basically use a popsicle stick and a checker. And you had a little wooden kind of board, if you will, with some holes in these boards that ran horizontally across it. And you'd try and shoot a checker, like, from your end of the board, bounce it through all the holes out the end of the other end. And, the other guy would be shooting back the other way. That was one. And then we played all kinds of games, steal the flag, dice game on a field where they shook it and you ran around. I don't know. And then in our neighborhood, we played a ton of games, hide and seek, kickball, played baseball of every form you can imagine. It's funny when I think back to that. Like, we had a neighbor, so we'd play on his front porch, and there we used a tape ball, like basically a big ball made out of masking tape. Sometimes we played a game called Strikeout, where one guy stands up against a brick wall. The other guy usually uses a tennis ball, and he throws it, and, you know, you bat it. And depending on what happens, if he catches it or it bounces or all these other things. But pretty much any place you could hit a ball and a bat, we would use it. And then in my case, sometimes we even went above and beyond and didn't use a ball. But at that point, I could see a tiny bit, as you may or may not recall. So my brother Joel, rest his soul, and I, when we played, we actually used a plastic milk jug in the backyard because that was big enough, and it didn't fly far so far that I could both see it to hit it when he pitched it, and as long as the sun was shining behind me, you know, at my back, when he hit it in a nice blue sky, that milk jug was very, the contrast was great. So I could, like, see it to catch it, or when it was on the green grass, easily find it. So, yeah, we used to play milk jug ball.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. You got to be creative, right? And, you know, you don't have a high level of income as a 10-year-old a lot of times, right? So you got to find the stuff. I can remember we used to take the popsicle sticks. You know, the ice cream man used to just be the highlight of the day, right? So you hear that music from like 12 blocks away, and you know, you scrounge up whatever change you could find and beg your parents for, like, please, can I just have a quarter, you know? And a lot of times you'd end up with a popsicle stick. And so, you know, anytime we could find some water in the gutter, you know, we decorate our popsicle sticks. We, you know, we use markers or crayons or whatever, and they were basically like race cars at that point. And you know, everyone would decorate their sticks, and we would race them from my house down to, and you couldn't go all the way to the stop sign. You had to stop just short, and you had to run down there and catch it because there was a storm drain. And if you're racing towards the storm drain, but you didn't want to go in the storm drain because then you'd lose your racer, right? So, and of course, me being, you know, who I am and have always been, you know, I'd always see if I could win a little cash off of the people. But we'd drop them in the gutter, and they'd go, you know, floating down the thing. But then, you know, you never knew if you were the guy who's going to get caught up on some sticks or some weeds or something that was growing out of the, you know, out of the concrete or, you know, or the asphalt or something. And you know, it's kind of luck of the draw. You might be in first, but then you get caught up, you know, in something, and then someone goes flying by you. You know, we played a lot of variations of baseball. It depends how many guys you got, you know. If you only, you know, if you got five or six guys, you know, you can actually have a pitcher, but you can only hit to left field then, right? So you could have a shortstop and a couple outfielders or something. If you got some more guys, maybe you get to play a game. Less guys, you know, you might play over the line or something, which was something we played quite a bit of. Same thing. We take a pair of socks, and then we just wrap a bunch of duct tape around them real tight, you know, and make a ball out of it. And then you don't even need a glove or anything. And then if it hits a car, because we'd play over the line in the street a lot. So now if you hit a car, you're not breaking a window, right? And yeah, it was just fun times, man. You got to be creative. You got to use your brain. You know, that's something, you know, technology is fantastic and everything. And I mean, I use it. I use my phone every single day, and I'm glued to it like most humans are at this point. But, you know, I remember the days when you had to be creative, man. You're bored, like, and you might sit around for an hour and, like, not even know what to do. And, you know, you're just kind of pulling grass out of the ground while you think of something up. And then next thing you know, you come up with an idea and like, hey, who's in? Let's all go. And you know, you either walk to a park or the pool or, you know, whatever you've decided you're going to do for the next, you know, chunk of time. And then, you know, then you're not bored again for 3 hours. And then, you know, you come back and, you know, maybe you're having some dinner or whatever, and then, you know, stays light so late, and it's summer, you ain't got nothing to do, I ain't got no job, I'm a kid, right? And so, yeah, you get back, and then you'd be up all night, you know, doing other things, you know, and hide and seek at night was my favorite, and we played a lot of what we called bike ditch 'em. So, you know, in my neighborhood, we all rode bicycles, and we'd break into teams, and then we set up the parameters like, okay, 217th to 221st, you know, no backyards, no houses. Because guys would always go, you know, you've been looking for guys for an hour and you can't find them anywhere. And then you go to Nick's house and they're in there playing Atari. And it's like, you, dude, that's a bunch of crap, yeah, man. So our rules were no backyards, You know, no backyards, no houses, dude. You can't hide. You know, it's Beck Ditcham. You got, you can hide behind a bush, but you know, or behind a car, but you don't get to like go inside closed doors. And yeah, man, it was just fun times, Kelly. Like you said, it was real freeing. You know, you didn't have a mortgage or you know, any of the adult things that we have, you know, as you get older, and you know, no real responsibilities. But like you kind of said, like I could go, you know, as long as I got some money, I could go buy my own like junior burrito from the Mexican place, or I could go, you know, go to the store and buy some bubble gum, or you know what I mean. I was just kind of free to live my life, you know, however I saw fit that day.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, times change and evolve, and I mean, I think, you know, it was a little freer for kids, at least where I grew up, that you could do more. And, you know, 75 cents was a gold mine to go down to the store, man. I mean, you got 75 cents, that's going to get you one big thing for a quarter, you know, and 50 cents, like, to spread across all kinds of stuff, you know, little candies or who knows what. And, you know, that's like I said, a gold mine. And
yeah, it's a little different now. Inflation has hit.
we were fortunate to, I'd have to think, you know, how many, but I'll bet you within a 4 to 6 year age range, probably good 10 to 12 kids in the neighborhood at different times that, you know, were involved in different activities. So whether that was the athletic stuff or, you know, hide and go seek, kick the can, Red Rover. There's a great game, huh?
Yeah. You don't see that one too much anymore. Basically, like, why don't you run as fast as you can, and we're going to try and clothesline you.
Yeah, I mean, here. Now, imagine that. I told you I could see a tiny bit. How you want to be on the other side from me, though? I can see a tiny bit, but wasn't like I could aim for the arms between the people. So when I think back on that, that might have been a little wild. I'm running full out towards this, you know, it's in the road, so I know I got to go that way. And I don't know. I don't remember any injuries or anything. But
well, that's the other thing, dude. I mean, I look back at some of the choices that we made and the things that, you know, I mean, just simple things like riding in the back of the pickup truck or something, right? And it's just like, oh, my gosh. You know, and I don't ever remember being hurt, dude. So, I mean, we did, you know, much more reckless things. And, you know, you're building these makeshift jumps for your bike, you know, with just like miscellaneous building materials that's laying around. And, you know, you've tipped a trash can over and you got a piece of 2x6 and, you know, you're pedaling top speed down the thing. And, you know, a lot of times these jumps would just explode and then you go tumbling across the asphalt. And, you know, but looking back, I don't ever remember like actually getting hurt. I'm sure I came in with plenty of scrapes here and there. And yeah, I used to dive off the chimney into the swimming pool. And I don't know, man, I survived all of it.
Yeah, the one of the favorite things, so school for those in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, Elizabeth Water School, again, which was two blocks away from my parents' house. At some point in our childhood, they like put in all new blacktop at that school. And so my younger brother, Joel, and I, we'd do this thing that we called bike and board. And this is when skateboards were in the 70s. You know, they weren't these big monster things they are now. But one of us, and again, I could see, this was a big, big, wide-open playground. So I could see well enough to do this in either position. And I think back, and I'm like, if I had a child today, I would never probably let him do this way. But one of us would get on the bike, and then we had a rope tied to the back of the bike, and we'd pull the other person on the skateboard, right? Because this is all brand new concrete blacktop, so it's smoother than smooth. And that was a blast, you know. And then it's kind of like water.
So you fell.
Well, and that was the thing. Every once in a while, you know, yes, this was all new blacktop, but every once in a while there'd be like a big rock on it, and the board goes over that rock and usually throws you a bit. I'm sure I got a couple scrapes. But I don't remember getting seriously hurt, so that was good.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit before we came on air, and yeah, summer's definitely changed for me in terms of my excitement level for it. But I can remember, man, and I can still picture the feeling, and yeah, it was just, year after year was just an exciting time, even as you, it's especially like when you're little, I don't think you really pick up on it, kindergarten, first grade, second grade. I don't recall that I really, picked up on it. But once you start having some level of freedom, you have the ability to ride a bike, you have the ability to play games, you have the ability to be included, you can think for yourself and strategize, and you're starting to come into your body a little bit and have a little more coordination, and you can swing a bat and actually hit a ball and things like that, right? So then, like you said, that kind of sweet spot, man, maybe from like, nine till, really through all the way through high school. Because even in high school this summer, you might be driving, right? So now it's really exciting. And, I always worked through the summers, starting in high school. I think I started really working about 15 years old, and then now I'm just trying to make money, and so a lot of, but even then, it's not an everyday full-time job all the time. You know what I mean? You're picking up hours where you can here and there, and you got a lot of downtime to go to the lake or, go find something fun to do with your friends.
Yeah. And then, the other thing is we'd also get into big old game marathons, especially if, it's raining for a day, whatever, you play a Mega Monopoly game or all kinds of other games like that. I don't know. Just, it's a beautiful day here where I am now, and I'm working and then taking a break and recording this podcast. But I'm thinking, man, back in the day, it was nice to kind of have that carefree world.
Well, I get little pieces of it. I mean, and last weekend, we got the backyard all cleaned up, got the pool all dialed in, got the got it all sparkly and blue, and filled up the propane tanks, and we just kind of laid her out at the pool, and you get hot, you jump in the water, swim around a little bit, and then I was smoking some meat and stuff, and relaxing by the pool, not a care in the world. Might have poured myself a little soda, just relaxing with a little glass of whiskey, and kind of half tending to some meat in the smoker and doing some swimming. And so I still get pieces of it, but it's usually like a Saturday. It's not 3 months of joy anymore. It's 8 hours.
You mentioned this. I'm just curious, Chris, what were some of your first jobs that you remember?
I actually worked with your brother Matt as the first. Well, so I always was about having some spending money. I like the freedom to buy what I want, and not what my mother and father told me I could have, right? And so, and I was never afraid to work for it. So I always like mowed lawns or washed cars. I'd steal the dish soap and a sponge and a chamois from the house and roll around on my bike, and I'd just hang the handle of the bucket. And I had the dish soap and like a little scrub brush for the wheels, and a couple different items that I could like steal from my dad's garage, then I'd roll around and see if I could find someone outside and just ask if I could wash their car. And those were when I was like more like, I'd say 11, 12 years old, right? And then I had a couple of lawns that I mowed I don't remember. I think it was every other week, right? So twice a month I'd mow this lawn, and I think I got like $5 a lawn or something. And the spending money was always something I wanted. And then at 13 was the first summer job I had. I worked actually for your brother Matt for Ford Tile. And that was my first introduction to like, oh my gosh, this isn't like washing someone's car or mowing someone's lawn. Like, now I'm mixing mortar in a tub and carrying buckets of cement and boxes of tile. And like, that was work, man. And
tile helper, huh?
Yeah. I wasn't with him like 40 hours a week. It was more like a couple days here, a couple days there type of thing. But You know, that was a little bit more money than a lot more work. But, you know, you can only mow so many lawns, right? You can only wash so many cars. Most people tell you no, right? So, you know, whereas this was like, hey, I'm going to get 10 hours today, you know? And then I don't recall what I did at age 14, but I know starting around, or maybe that was 14. So after eighth grade, I was living up in Washington State, and it's a heavy agriculture. And in the summer, they got to stock all the hay for the winter for all the cows, you know, for all the cattle. And so, you know, in the summer is when that hay becomes ready. You know, it's been cut, it's dried, it's been baled up. And then basically, you know, a lot of places, there's different machinery and stuff. Different places do it differently. But a lot of places will just bale it up into these bales. And then they're just laying out in a field, and then you got to hire like day laborers to go out and pick it up and throw it on the wagon, you know. And usually the farmer would have like, you know, their 12-year-old kid driving the tractor, right? Because that's an easy job that you can't mess up. You just put it in gear and basically let it idle. And all you got to do is like churn it around at the end of the run, right? And so, you know, the tractor would just run at a pretty reasonable pace, like, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 miles an hour or something you could keep up with. And then, you know, you come across a bale and you throw it on the wagon, and then you throw the next one and the next one and the next one. And then you just pile that wagon, you know, as the trailer as high as you could. And towards in the beginning, it was super easy because all you got to do is just throw it up on the trailer, which is like maybe 4 feet off the ground, let's say. Right. Well, as you start piling hay up. Well, now the thing's 8 feet tall, 10 feet tall, you know what I mean? Because we've been stacking bales up for the last hour. So this thing's now we all of a sudden we got to lift these things and throw them. And not to mention, I've been walking for the last hour and picking stuff up. So I'm at my most tired when it's most difficult. And that hay is itchy. And then you got to go back to the barn. And some places were cool, man. They had conveyor belts. So, you know, like two of us would stay on the wagon and two of us would go up to stack in the barn. And, dude, you just put the bale on the conveyor belt, and then it just, like, trucks it right up to you. And then you pick it up, and you go walk it to where you got to stack it next, right? And there's a method to it, you know, two go this way, one goes that way, blah, 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 so it doesn't tip over. And but, dude, you're up in this barn. It's hot, and it's sticky, and this hay's all over you, and everything's itchy, you know. And but that was the gig that – nothing paid like that, man, for like a 14 or 15 year old kid. There's nowhere I could go, and I don't remember what minimum wage was, but I wasn't even old enough to legally work anyway, so like I couldn't get a job. But bucking hay was something that, you know, you could work for cash. There was no taxes. You just, you know, you just show up on a Saturday or whatever, and then, you know, you work as many hours. And then it was like a honor system where it was like impolite to ask what you're making. It was like a taboo, right? Like question to even ask, right? You just show up, you work, and they pay you at the end of the day. And some of these guys were, you know, terrible, man, you know. And other guys would pay you pretty good. And usually, like, you know, the wife would come out with some sandwiches at one point and some lemonade or something. You know, they took good care of you, man. And at the end of it, like a good wage, if I remember, used to be like around 10 bucks. If you got 10 bucks an hour, that was like, oh, yeah, man. Hey, if you got any more fields, call me, please, you know. And kind of proud. So I worked for one summer doing that, and then the next summer rolled around, and basically I got all kinds of phone calls then. And, you know, I got a lot of like, hey, heard you're a good worker, man, I got a field. And at that point I could kind of like cherry pick, because like I couldn't be in two fields on one Saturday, right? I had to pick one. And so, you know, you kind of ask around town, like, hey, I'm going to go work. You know, I got the Johnsons called me, like, oh, dude, you don't want to work for the Johnsons, man. They'd give you like $5 an hour, man. No conveyor belt, dude. It's terrible, man. The tractor's always breaking down and you're standing out in the field waiting for him to fix it. It sucks. Oh, okay. You know, or the Smith's farm's got a field. Oh, yeah, he's a good guy. I'd go work for him, you know. And so, you know, by the following year, I was able to, you know, you kind of get a feel for things, and you know the guys you're not going to work for again. You know what I mean? You worked my tail off, and you gave me $5 an hour, dude. Like, yeah, I'm not coming back to your field, man, next year. And you got the guys that you liked a lot, you know, that treated you really good and paid you well. And yeah, I made enough money doing that. You know, I'd work a Saturday and a Sunday. You know, usually make somewhere around a couple hundred bucks or so. And then, dude, at 15 years old in like 1989 or whatever, man, $200 is like that lasts me forever. So I can eat whatever I want, do whatever I want. And so, yeah, I just work like the weekends and buck hay. And then, you know, some of my counterparts, you could work at the cannery where like you pick berries. And that was the other summer job. But that paid like $3.75 an hour. And it's like, so I got to work 10 hours at the cannery. Now, sure, it's easier work. But man, I'd rather just hump hay for 7 hours and make twice as much money. So I always went that route, man. Like I want to get as much money as I can in as short a time as I can. And I don't care how hard you work me. Like you put me through whatever you want, but I want money when I'm done, you know? And yeah, so those were like my early summer jobs.
Yeah, when I was really young, got pocket money by collecting newspapers for recycling. Joel and I took our wagons around. We'd go up to houses and, hey, you got any old newspapers? I can't remember what you got, but back at that time, you would actually get some money. I know we'd load up my dad's truck, back of it, with papers from now till forever and take them down to the junkyard and get a little bit of cash. And then we don't talk about blindness stuff too much, but I'll tell this short story. I think, as I've mentioned on the podcast more than once, went to, quote, regular school, if you will, for lack of a better term. They were just starting to do this in Wisconsin, where they, now it's called mainstreaming, I guess, is the official term, but when I was a really young kid, I was given a choice between me and my parents to go to a school in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. It couldn't be in my hometown of Fond du Lac, or go to a school for the blind, which they do a good job and nothing wrong with that. But I ended up going to Oshkosh. But then when I was 16, they said I had to go to the school for the blind for a summer program for one summer, like 6 or 8 weeks. I don't know, to make sure I knew how to be blind, in a way, is what I used to think of it as. Like, I don't know, they put me through different tests on my skills and other things, but they also had some work opportunities. And let me tell you, I'm glad things have changed, because I'll never forget these two things. The two jobs that I made money at for that summer. One, I got paid $7.50 for every 1,000 of these that I did. I had a box full of test tubes on my left. I had some rubber stoppers in a big old jar, a plastic jar. I had some water and some labels. And my job was to pull a test tube out of this box, wrap a label around it, put a rubber stopper in it, and then stack it in this other wooden box on my right that held 1,000 of these. And for every 1,000 of those I put into the box, I got $7.50. The state of Wisconsin, I was told, used them for some kind of environmental testing or something. I'm doing this from memory, but that's my recollection. And then I eventually graduated up to what they called laundry tags. This was no longer piece labor, but this was hourly wage, man.
Oh.
What I did then was I had a big old like tag, kind of, you know, like a just a big old piece of paper with a hole in it. And I had a string, a big box of strings. And my job was to take the string, stick it through the hole, kind of fold it in half, stick it through the hole in the tag, and then tie a knot so that it would be stuck in there. I honestly don't remember every little detail, but the state used those for as laundry tags in the prison when they were doing laundry, I was told. And I think minimum wage might have been $3.35 an hour. But I mean, I can go back and look on the Social Security Administration, and you will see you know, the first earnings for Kelly Ford were like in 1983, where I had a...
Where you were slave labor, dude. Like, I mean, it sounds like a step up from waterboarding, man. Like, that is, you know, to know what, you know, you do. I mean, I called you yesterday, you know, and you solved a problem for me on the computer over the phone, not having my computer in front of you or the other computer in front of you or anything else. And, you know, your brother Scott was always like this with automotives. You know, you could just call him, and he don't even need to see the car. He can just picture it in his brain and come to a solution, you know, just by, you know, just sheer knowledge that he carries in his brain. And the idea that you were putting labels on test tubes, dude, is, yeah, definitely a waste of your talent, sir.
Yeah, and I mean, in all seriousness, employment for people with disabilities is a serious topic. I mean, the unemployment rate is at least twice the non-disabled employment rate. But, and I study this a little bit because if you really get into this, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics actually has some other ways. Like, so the number that you always hear about in the news is the unemployment rate, and when it's 5 and 6%, that's considered bad. But there's another number that they actually publish that is, to me, more interesting, and it is what they call labor force participation rate. And that is more like, are you even involved in the labor force or not, is the short version, right? So whether if you're unemployed, employed, whatever, you're participating in the labor force. But they also measure like people that aren't doing any of that. It's not that they're unemployed or employed. They're not even trying to find a job. And the last time I looked at those numbers, like for people with disabilities, if the labor force participation rate had jumped up to 38%, that would have been high. And the labor force participation rate that they study, like let's say for people 18 to 64 that aren't classified as disabled, it's like hovering probably around 70%. And so, you know, we have a lot of fun on the podcast, and this is actually something I do. It's part of why I do what I do. I've worked in the high-tech world trying to make technology itself that people use in the workplace, you know, work better so that they can, we all can get and maintain jobs and things like that. So, yeah, I think I'm fortunate. I had a good education. I was born with, you know, a good set of skills. Family that, you know, challenged me to be all I can be, not to quote the Army line, I guess, but it's something that I think about because a lot of times people don't have those expectations set for them. And, you know, I'm a big believer in that expectations are important no matter who and what you are, because that's how you strive for things. And, you know, if you don't have those set, you won't aim as how will you know what to aim for? And people that know me in other contexts, like in accessibility and things, they'll hear me talk about this a lot, where this is why I'm passionate about quality and things like that, because like my expectations are set high, but they're really not higher than anybody else's, but they're set that I used to have a debate with people, and I've used this on my blog, and we can go back to our fun after this, but this is another part of me that I think about. I've often said that, you know, when it comes to accessibility and disability, the debate isn't whether the glass is half empty or half full, because, right, I could take either side of that argument. And to be clear, you know, the fact that I can access all the information I can, everything else that I'm taking part in, I mean, that's all wonderful and great. But it's not about debating whether the glass is half empty or half full. It is more like if other people are getting a full glass of milk, you know, hey, I'm from Wisconsin, so we'll use milk.
Well, you might as well use beer at this point.
Well, okay, there is that, too.
Some people can actually relate to.
There you go. If you're getting a full glass, I deserve a full glass. And if you don't give me the same full glass, then why? It doesn't matter whether I see it as half full or half empty. So that's kind of the equality thing that I'm passionate about.
Yeah, and rightfully so, man. I mean, I'm on your team on that. Now, you know, obviously, you know, I can't understand what it's like to be blind. You know what I mean? I've always been able to see. And so I can try to guess, you know what I mean? But there's just no way to accurately do that, right? So, but yeah, for what it's worth, man, I feel the same way you do. And it's not just about disabilities. It's across the board, man. I just feel like all people are equal. I don't give a shit how much money you make, or, you know, where you came from, or, you know, it's just, you know, at least everyone should have an equal opportunity. Now, if you're not willing to try and you're not willing to work, you know, if you're a quitter, then that's on you, man. Now, I don't have pity for you any longer. But if you are, you know, putting maximum effort in, then you should get, you know, what you deserve for that, man. And if there's obstacles put in your way, now, sometimes they're just going to be put there and they're not even your fault, man. I mean, you know, obstacles come up all in everybody's life that are like, man, I didn't plan on this, you know. And you got to overcome those and stuff. But, you know, if you're willing to put the work in, you should have the opportunity. That's I guess, the simplest way to put
it. Yeah, you know, and I'm just like, hey, man, don't stack the deck, man. You know, if circumstances are such that, you know, we all have different things, and that's one thing. But, like, if, you know, across a lot of dimensions, if you're going to intentionally either actively work to stack the deck or not eliminate barriers that you know how to eliminate and should, to me, that's another version of inaction, if you will, or delayed action. You know, it's one of the areas where I work and is in accessibility and things like that. That's another challenge.
Well, I would imagine from, you know, let's say a business standpoint, you know, and you want to make things accessible to all. And I would imagine it boils down to like a profitability in most cases. It's like, yeah, you know, this 3% can't use our product, but man, the amount it would cost us to let them use it isn't worth it, you know, to us in terms of bottom line dollars and cents. And yeah, I would just take the argument too freaking bad. so the rest of us should just not use that product too, then, you know what I mean? And
that's where it really gets interesting when you think about it, Chris, because yes, that is sometimes the very argument. But if you think about that in other ways, right? If we look across, and you know, people debate this across a wide range of dimensions in general, but if you look at other things that businesses are forced to do, right? Not all of those are as profitable as they want, but as a society, we've decided that it is worthwhile to compel that. You can think about things like, right, pollution control in manufacturing.
Right.
If we go back 40, 50 years, I mean, pollution was so bad, right? We had rivers that were literally starting on fire. If anybody else remembers that and the level of pollution, and, you know, as a group of citizens, we've put more environmental protections in place, or automobiles, right? I mean, it used to be that, you know, they were more dangerous until the
seat belts, crumple zones, you know,
all the other
shatterproof
things,
glass, you know, that, on and on and know, on. Yeah. You don't put the gas tank at the back of the car. Hashtag Ford Pinto.
So, I mean, we do that. Or, you know, I was mentioning to somebody, I was having this conversation with someone the other day, and I'm like, you know, hey, if you wanted to have a totally free market, then you would say the free market is, we shouldn't need to mandate food inspection, right? But then what could happen is, you know, food companies could say, well, yeah, if a few people get sick or die from our food, we can just afford to pay those bills, and we won't spend all this money on food inspection and all the other things. But again, as a society, we've said that's not acceptable. And we're seeing some of those same kind of laws happen. We have, you know, maybe another time we'll do a deeper podcast on some of this. But there are more laws. Just, you would have never heard of this, Chris, but for example, next summer, a law in the EU, European Union, called the, as you can imagine, European Union Accessibility Act comes into play. And it has some of the strictest conformance provisions that they are asking of businesses, and potentially some of the greater penalties for non-compliance than laws have had here in the U.S. So it's all an interesting thing. And so and this is where it always goes for me, man, right? I mean, go back to summer when you're a kid, it's all carefree, and you don't think about any of these sorts of things. And then when you're an adult, you know, you have a day job and all these responsibilities, and there's both good and bad, right? The good is, hey, obviously you know a lot more, like the very things I was just talking about, or you and all the work you do in roofing. And so, but that knowledge also generally comes with more responsibilities, and I guess that's what they call part of life and growing up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if I had my way, I'd go back to being a kid. I'd just stay at like 14 years old forever. So, you know, between it all, I mean, it was just a generally easier, freer time. But yeah, and summer definitely for me too brings back, you know, some of those memories. And I'm a little jealous. My son's 14, you know, and he's just living his best life and out there. And I want that for him, and I'm happy for him, and I really am. But I'm a little bit envious, to be honest. I was like, man, I want to go down water slides on a Tuesday. That sounds great.
Yeah, I hear you. But I guess, Chris, instead of going down water slides, looks like you've already been chomping at the bit and thinking about the NFL. We've been in a hiatus in the off season. We had draft and all that. But, man, before we started recording, you told me you've already done 104 drafts.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. I'm doing my part. I couldn't help myself, man. I was all jonesing for the draft, and then the NFL draft took place, and then I don't know, I just never could get it out of my mind. And then I started doing best ball drafts, and I was like, well, let me just do one. And then, you know, as soon as you get the juices flowing, man, it's like, well, let me do another one and another one and another one. So I do primarily all slow drafts where they're just, you know, you get like 8 to 10 hours per pick. So, you know, they take multiple days to do. And you just, you know, when your turn comes up, you got like 10 hours to make your selection. And then it's the next guy's turn and he's got 10 hours to pick and so on. It just keeps going like that. You know, so I might have like 15 of those things running at a time. And in the first one, they're all random selections. So the first one, maybe I got the first pick. And then in another one, I got the seventh pick and the ninth pick. And so, yeah, I've definitely, the problem right now is you don't have enough knowledge. Like the camp battles are still going on. You don't even know who the starting quarterback is in some locations. Like, you know, what are the one and two wide receivers on a team? You know, who's going to play in the slot? Who's going to be outside? You know, all these things. You just don't have answers to. So you're working with not without all the information, right? So but these ones I keep really, they're real inexpensive buy-ins. I know they're all trials and errors, and like, you know what I mean. I'm just kind of feeling things out. I'm seeing where guys are going, you know, and kind of working out my draft strategy. And then later in the year, usually like tail end of August, right before the season starts, you know, all the information is available. You know, if a couple guys went down in camp, which seems to happen every year, okay, well, I'll take those guys off my list. I won't be taking the guy with the torn ACL this year. And, you know, then those, that period of time is really, Kelly, it's all preparation for Tennessee, buddy. That's, I mean, I'm just getting ready. I'm doing everything I can to be as prepared as possible to whoop on my uncles. So my entire off season is dedicated to beating you guys.
Yeah, I know our, for podcast listeners, our family draft is about 2 months away, a little bit less than 2 months away in Tennessee again. I don't know if it's going to come through on the podcast, but I'm smiling here because in the background, I'm just talking about kids in summer. I can hear a bunch of kids in from my neighbor's house actually laughing because it's a nice sunny day outside and they've got a little, not super little, above ground pool, and I can just hear the kids playing in it and laughing. Maybe the microphone's picking it up from time to time, but I just think back to those days.
Oh yeah, sometimes you put a makeshift slip and slide together, you know, and maybe no one can afford the actual slip and slide, so you just duct tape some trash bags together, you know, cut them open and turn a 160 degree hose on and run some water and that's cool, man. A kid's having a good time. That's the way it should be, man. You should enjoy yourself, and the kids should be having fun. And, you know, that's why, I'm so happy for my son, and he's just having a good time, you know, living his best life. And that's what childhood should be about, man. And, I'm happy for them. They should be out there enjoying themselves and splashing around and having some fun with each other.
So you said in the NFL, you know, we don't necessarily know who the starting quarterback's going to be. But in some cases, with trades and other things, we have examples of we know who it's not going to be. Russell Wilson definitely won't be starting in Denver.
For sure not. Actually, they got a pretty even three-way battle. I tend to think that Bo Nix is going to win that job just for the sheer sake that, you know, I have a feeling it was Peyton's guy. And, you know, he probably wants to get started on winning as soon as possible. And even if it's not this year, which I, if they're being honest with themselves, I don't think Denver, you know, they may say different things publicly, but I think Denver probably knows they're still a year or so away. I think it'll be Bo Nix there. And then I don't know that Russell Wilson's going to be starting in the NFL at all by the time the season wears down. I do think he could probably win that job just on sheer, like, smiles and, like, hey, I'm Russell Wilson. I've been doing this a while. But you know, I tend to think that by the time the season finally winds down, you know, they've seen enough to realize that, you know, Russell Wilson isn't the long-term answer. And, you know, let's give Justin Fields a look and see what he can do in Pittsburgh, because he's young enough. If we can make him into a quarterback, then he is a long-term solution potentially. You know, whereas Russell Wilson's kind of the you know, bridge. You know, they got so lucky, man. I mean, they got Russell Wilson for the league minimum. And then they got Justin Fields on a rookie deal, you know, the last year of his rookie deal. And it's like, you got two, you know, pretty, a lot of people would love to have those guys as their quarterbacks, and you got them for nothing, basically, bag of chips.
I really wonder, you know, what the Bears are going to do. I mean, this is
the Bears? I think the Bears, you talking about how good they're going to be?
Or will they be? I mean, they haven't had great track records with quarterbacks, dude.
No, for sure, but there's other franchises that kind of went through a similar thing. What guy did they have that was, like, highly touted, though, too? You know what I mean? Like, Caleb Williams is, you know, I'm not going to even say generational, because that word gets thrown around for, like, a dude every single year. So I don't think we have a generation that, you know, a generation isn't 1 year, right? And they just seem to have a guy like that every single year. So, but he is, you know, a dude who, for multiple seasons in college, looked like, okay, this guy's going to be an excellent pro. And I don't remember you'd have to go back to when you to even like your childhood or before, when they had a guy who was this good of a prospect. So I will admit that they haven't had any quality quarterback play in my lifetime that I can remember, not for an extended period of time, not from one guy, right? So but they also, man, in fairness, they've never, you know, put a lot of stock into that either, and they haven't had the opportunity to take you know, the first overall pick and a guy who has won a Heisman Trophy. You know what I mean? He has looked the part, and he's not a flash in the pan in college. You know, he didn't have one good year. I mean, he's shown this year after year after year. So if anyone has a chance, I think it's likely him.
I just don't know. For me, the jury's going to be out a little bit. And we'll see. I mean, I think it's such a tough spot. What blows me away is the amount of money that the Trevor Lawrence just got.
Well, and that's a big debate right now, and that's a topic of conversation. You know, so when you look at it from just dollars and value sense, it doesn't make any sense. Like, there's just, but when you look at, you know, supply and demand and just what the market is, that's what they cost, man. I mean, this is what quarterbacks cost. And, you know, the bottom line is you are going to be hard pressed to go win a championship if you don't have one. If you don't have a good one, it is not impossible, but very close to impossible to win a Super Bowl if you don't have at least above average quarterback play. And if that's where you're at, then you better have elite team around him. And, you know, so few teams are going to have that, right? You got to have like an all-time dominant defense, and then you could get by. You could do what Tampa Bay did or what the Baltimore Ravens did. You know, you can have an all-time great defense and then have average quarterback play. But if you look at the Super Bowls that they won, both times, well, especially in the Baltimore case with Joe Flacco, they and who was the not just Flacco, but who's the other one that Baltimore won another Super Bowl with? Who was the quarterback, man? Help me out, Kelly.
What was that dude's name?
Dilfer, Trent Dilfer.
Trent Dilfer.
Right, but you're talking about, like, you know, maybe top five all-time defense, right?
Yeah,
and,
no, and I mean, it's... I look at it this way, right? I mean, the numbers are wild, but they are what they are. And, like, if that's the going rate, it's what you got to pay, and you've got to get the best you can get in that for that price range of what's available to you at any given time.
Well, and that's just it, and that's where Tua Tagovailoa is and Dak Prescott is, and to be honest, the Packers are with Jordan Love. Oh, and, you know, hey, dude, if you want a quarterback like this, it costs you $55 million to get one, man. That's the price. And you can't win without one. And it's like, yeah, but he's not worth $55 million. Yeah, I know, but what are you going to do if you don't have him? You know, you're going to be the Carolina Panthers, or you're going to be the, you know, New York Giants, or, you know, just insert team here that doesn't have a quarterback, the Vegas Raiders, you know, on and on. You go through the league and look at the guys who have quarterback problems and then tell me how good those teams are. And so I don't think they're worth it either, but, you know, when you look at the fact that you got to have one and this is what they cost, well, I guess he's worth it then, you know, in that lens.
Yeah, I expect, you know, everything I've read said they're going to try and get a deal done before the season starts for Jordan Love, but I expect that deal's probably going to come in somewhere about, you know, 5 to 6 years, average out over the whole contract, $58 to $60 million a year.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's the going rate. So that's just, you know, is what it is.
We better hope that last year. This is the challenge with these kind of deals now.
He had like 9 good games, dude. So he had another handful that were like above average or average to above average, you know. But he finished so strong, and he looked so good down the stretch, and then in the playoffs. And it's like, you know, he made himself $300 million by the way he played in say 7 games.
But you just really got to hope that what you saw isn't, and I'm not saying it is, but you really got to hope as talent evaluators and everything else that what you see in these cases isn't, it is the long-term prospect, because if you're wrong, recovering from these deals is incredibly hard.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've seen it with team after team. where when if something really goes south, they've got so much, you know, as they call it, dead cap salary money sitting there. And even the Green Bay Packers suffered from this for the past couple of years because they were paying Aaron Rodgers so much money last year, you know, to play for the Jets in the end. He didn't play for them, but
to play for no one, yeah.
You know, but I mean, because and that's how these teams do it. You know, some more than others, where they play salary cap games and can push money off and all that. But it's interesting. Anything else jump out your on your first look around the NFL before the season starts that you're looking for, or big changes that surprised you?
No, I'm curious how some of these moves make you. Kirk Cousins in Atlanta. You know, it's there's a lot of young guys. I mean, you know, we'll see. You know, time will tell. You know, but at least in terms of like PFF grades and prospect ratings and all the, you know, the metrics that they use to evaluate talent. You know, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, you know, Bo Nix, all of these guys, you know, have a chance to be really good. And if that's
Michael Penix.
What's that?
Michael Penix.
Michael Penix, too. Not all of them are, but what if a high percentage of them are? You know what I mean? What if four or six are? And then there's still the chance that the, you know, Jordan Travis or some of the guys, you know, who are the this year's, like, Brock Purdy's, you know what I mean? They weren't the highly touted guys. So, you know, it's hard to say. Now, if we can get competent, you know, players at a high percentage, say, you know, four or five of them, well, that entirely shifts the league now. Now these teams, and then those teams who got those guys are in a really good position. You know, especially like you look at the Bears, they had a really good defense at the tail end of last year. They added DeAndre Swift. They added Keenan Allen. You know, both, you know, good pros, and both excellent at helping a maybe underdeveloped quarterback, because they are so good at their jobs in terms of catching the ball. Now Swift is a running back, but he's a really, really good pass catching back. So, and then Keenan Allen is one of the best route runners in all of football. So he's going to be exactly where he's supposed to be every time. And he's going to put himself in a position where all you got to do is get the ball close. Like I'm giving you more margin for error because I'm so good at my job that, you know, the chances you make a mistake are less. Right. And, you know, in addition to DJ Moore and you know, Cole Kmet, they added Gerald Everett, who's a very good pass catching tight end. So, you know, the Bears are an interesting one for me because, you know, kind of what I was alluding to, like, yeah, I know they haven't had a lot of success and that offense has always been a struggle. And Chicago's been a wasteland for quarterbacks. They've never gotten it right. And kind of like the New York Jets, man, they just never get it right. That's just, you can't play quarterback for the Jets because you'll, you know, if you're not terrible, if you don't suck, then you'll tear an Achilles or who knows, something bad's going to happen if you try to play quarterback for the Jets. And the Bears have always been that way too. But I also will concede that they have never been in as good a position before either. So we'll see. And then, you know, across the board, man, we'll just, you know, there could be, you know, we had a lot of injuries at the quarterback position last year, and the quarterback play as a whole throughout the league was not great. So now if you had a Patrick Mahomes, you know, like ask the Bengals what life was like without Joe Burrow, pretty rough, right? If you don't have an elite guy, it is really tough to compete on the back end once we get into January and playoffs, right? So, and last year there was just a plain shortage just because of injuries, man. And a lot of guys went down. Anthony Richardson went down. Kirk Cousins went down. Aaron Rodgers went down, you know, and Joe Burrow and on and on and on, right? And then I think there's a chance, though, that within a year or two, we see, oh, we're back. You know, all these guys are healthy again. Kirk Cousins is healthy again. Aaron Rodgers is healthy again. Not only that, Caleb Williams is playing good. Drake May's playing good. Like, you know, better than expected. You know, Bo Nix is playing better than expected, you know, and on. So I think there's a chance we get back to a really good place at that position. And if we have good quarterback play, then we have good product, you know, and NFL should be really exciting to watch.
Yeah, I think, you know, of moves in the offseason, I actually Keelan Allen to the Bears is really an interesting one because, as you said, that guy's just money. He strikes me as just a no-nonsense go about my business. And my business is, you know, catching the ball but also making others around me better. And I think that I've always liked him as a player. And I think, again, I know I said the jury's out, but I think that he may be in a position to help them. If they're going to have success, doing things like picking him up will be a big part of that, because you are right. They're just taking – you're bringing assurance to that position. Like, you just don't got to worry about what that guy's going to do.
Right. Now, I mean, he's a little older, so you might have to worry about health a little bit. But, you know, and then you can't quantify what that guy brings into the wide receiver room. You know, him and DJ Moore are professional wide receivers. They're good at what they do for a living. And, you know, wide receiver rooms aren't made of two people, right? There's usually six or seven of them in there. And there's no doubt that those guys are going to have a positive effect on the other guys around them. And, you know,
yeah,
so,
because both of those guys, I mean, they practice the art of wide receiving. Some guys, hey, they just get by on raw talent and, you know, everything else. I'm not saying everybody doesn't practice, but you see it with some other players that they take things to the next level, where they're elite at not only their skill set, but in the ways they practice. I'm hemming and hawing a little bit because the Rams wide receiver is another guy
Cooper
like
Kupp?
This. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Where if you read about what that guy does in the off season, man, like, he practices his craft probably 365 a year.
Yep.
You know, just doing different things to get his footwork right and a million things that I guarantee not every wide receiver goes to these levels.
No. And, you know, the proof shows itself on the field, you know. And, yeah, and there's a lot of movement. And the beauty of the NFL, you know, with the salary cap and their efforts towards parity is, you know, it's effective, man. And, you know, heading into the season, you know, I'm sure there's a handful of fan bases that have pretty low, you know, if you're a New England Patriots fan right now, you know, you're probably not realistically thinking, like, this is our year, you know. But, you know, of the 32 teams, you know, probably 25 of them are like, hey, maybe, you know, and probably, you know, 10 or 12 of them are feeling like, yeah, I think we can do it, you know. And so, you know, you go across the rest of the leagues, you know, baseball, basketball, you know, that's not the case, man. You know what I mean? You got, you know, six teams, maybe 10, you know, six that feel like, hey, we got the team to do it this year. And another, you know, four or five that are like, maybe if things break right, if this player works out and that player works out, you know, we could be right in the mix, you know. And everyone else knows they ain't making the playoffs. And the NFL's just not like
baseball,
that, man.
Baseball, it blows me away. I mean, okay, I've been fortunate. The Milwaukee Brewers have been good for a few years now. They've been in the playoffs. I think it's like five of the last 6 years. They don't do much in the playoffs. So I've been fortunate there, but my gosh, I follow baseball relatively closely, and like, wow, the Chicago White Sox, for example, the season's halfway over, and I didn't look at the standings today, but I bet if I did, they're about 29 games out of first place or something like that.
Yeah, and the NFL, I mean, you're gonna have good teams and bad teams, and but there's just so much you know, equality, man, and it's exciting. It's why I think it's the best sports league, you know, in the country. Because, I mean, I like football, period, as a sport anyway. But it's just like everyone has a chance, man. And it's not till, you know, the end of November, people finally are like, oh, okay, maybe not, you know. But till then, you know, everyone's like, hey, we just got to win in Tennessee next week, and then win our home game against Minnesota, and we're right back in it, you know, you know, it just makes it more fun, man, and it makes it exciting. I'm jazzed. I mean, you know, I've been excited for football. I really didn't have – I had about a 2 or 3 week off season in terms of my fandom, you know, and then all of a sudden I'm back on the internet, and I'm looking up stuff. I'm trying to see who's going to get drafted and where, and, you know, from a fantasy perspective, you know, that stuff matters like year round, right? So I'm in a dynasty league where you keep all your team, and you know, there's a rookie draft where we draft the rookies, but other than that, man, you're looking at your team and you're trying to trade future picks for players or vice versa, you know what I mean? And so you know, even in May, I still care about football because I'm, you know, constantly trying to, you know, make my team as good as it can be and trying to research, what are some hidden gems out there? You know, what are some guys that are undervalued that I maybe could get on the cheap right now?
Well, then you missed your calling, Chris, because the Packers just named a new president. They, Mark Murphy, their current one, they have the bylaws of the Packers organization say you've got to retire at age 70. So he's finishing up his last year, and they just named a new president starting next year. So you should have put your name in the hat.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly don't. I mean, you know, I've never been in that world, so it's hard to say. But, I mean, I don't know, man. I think I do all right in that stuff. I definitely would have the passion for it. Like, I wouldn't be bored going into work, that's for sure.
Well, I think it, you know, I'm sure you probably could do okay. I mean, right, you'd be green, but, you know, it's about anything. Like, once you get into it and you learn, there's any job, there's a few things, right? There's, hey, do I have the knowledge or can I acquire the knowledge and skills to do it? All right, that's part of it, but that's generally learnable. Depending, it might take some time depending on what the job is. Do I have the interest? Like, I might be able to learn it and really be great at it, but it doesn't interest me. Do I have the opportunity? And then, you know, what else is going on in my life? And can I take advantage of that opportunity? You know, or, you know, so I'm sure you'd, you know, if, you know, I think about that for my own thing. Like, not that I would have been in the NFL, but, you know, again, going back to summer when the whole world, zero opportunity. And then as you make choices in life, you know, you gain more experience in one area, and that means probably certain other opportunities that are less available to you, but it's all good. And
yeah, well, we're running out of time now, but we never did touch on it. We'll have to have another episode, you know, getting into the basketball championship and NHL just finished up and
WNBA. yeah, because right now our opportunity to continue this conversation is waning.
Right.
And Chris, as always, I'm glad we got back on the air, and hope your rest of your day is great. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, Kelly.